Nika Burns, in her own quiet way, though perhaps that's not quite the word, is someone who is the theatrical equivalent behind the scenes of maybe Dame Judi Dench or Dame Helen Mirren. She has
the looks.
She has so many different hats on, it's ridiculous. She is the 50% owner of NIMAX Theatres, which is a production company, and also owns a number of large West End houses. She is also president of SALT, and her history includes time at both the Donmar and with the Really Useful Group. Nika, welcome to Theatre Voice.
Hello.
First of all, how on earth does someone end up getting to where you've got to? Did you want to be an actress as a child? Did you want to be in theatre? Did you want nothing to do with it?
I always wanted to be in theatre. I thought I was going to be a ballet dancer, and I then ended up going to university to read law to please my mother, and then I went to Bubba Douglas to do the postgrad course, and I was an actress, and quite successful, and kind of veered from doing parts like Perdita and Winter's Tale and Hermia and Midsummer Night's Dream to several productions of The Boyfriend, because I could dance, couldn't sing, but they never seemed to mind in those days. And in fact, it was at Crew Rep, which we dubbed Colditz at the time. During the production of The Boyfriend, I actually met Dilly Keane and Marilyn Katz, and we shortly afterwards, they started a group called Fascinating Aida, and I became the director and choreographer. So a traditional route, I think a lot of producers, as often they either start up by being actors or by being stage managers. And I was an actress who was very specific about what I wanted to do. So I suppose quite quickly in, I decided that I wanted to do my own work. I formed my own theatre company, and I co-wrote an adaptation of an H.E. Bates novella called Dulcimer for myself, which I'd read this book, and I thought, I really want to play this on stage, fantastic part. And it was the time-honoured thing. We took it off to the Edinburgh Festival Fringe and opened it at the Celtic Lodge on the Royal Mile with my total savings, £600, that I'd saved up in rep. And if it didn't get into my mum's Ford Escort car, then we didn't have it. We had to mime it. And it's just like you kind of Edinburgh Festival dreams. You go off to the Edinburgh, you get great reviews, you get noticed, you get tour dates, everything happens as you would have written it for yourself.
But most people who go to Edinburgh just lose the £600 and come home again a lot wiser and become accountants or lawyers or something.
I know, we made a profit of £38. And it's the thing I'm still to this day. I am prouder of that than anything else I've done, was that whole adventure. And taking it into context, my £600 was all the money I had in the world at the time. I mean, everything. It was every penny. And the reason I point that out is because it was a massive risk. And I had to go and live at home to be able to afford that risk. And my career has been characterised by taking huge risks. And that was my first huge risk, was, in a sense, backing what I wanted to do and my dream with every single penny I could lay my hand on. And it was just brilliant. And it changed my life. And the next year we had three productions, novella, as we called ourselves, because we were new and we started off with the play. The book was a novella rather than a novel. We did three pieces, and one was a not very good play that I co-wrote about Strindberg. we sort of got away with it, but that was all. And my partner, Colin Watkins, who works with Claire Dowie, they're now partners, was very interested in working with comedians in theatre. So he sort of started off, really. And by this time, we were sort of the second alternative comedy venue. We were running late night comedy at the Finborough. Because after we did Dulcimer, we were invited to go and play at the Finborough. And I was really pleased with that. And Finborough still has a very warm place in my heart. And we did late night comedy on Fridays and Saturdays. And it was an extraordinary time. This is in the 80s, because some of the performers who were doing the guest spots were just the most, now they're all household names. So the open spot, well, they didn't get paid and they came and did 5 minutes. We gave our first gigs to people like Paul Merton. I remember Jenny Eclair really well. Chris Barry, Jessica Martin. I mean, there was like a whole host. Mark Steele came and worked in a play with us when we did play Strindberg. We had a comedian playing Strindberg. Yes, that was quite an interesting experience. And it was a fantastically fertile time. And I made a, you know, made a whole load of connections which married the drama, the dramatic side of my life with my love of comedy and my huge admiration for just how hard it is to be a comic. Because we didn't have any money, I used to compare the shows. So I stood there every night watching them work and over a period watched them develop and really learned about just the sheer challenge it is of standing up on stage with nothing but yourself and your own thoughts. So that those early days, if you like, were very, very formative. And it was because of sort of getting up and being bloody-minded and doing it that very soon afterwards I became artistic director at the Donmar. So I was there from 1983 to 1989 when the theatre was due to close for redevelopment. And I'd always said that at that time I would leave. It was the right time, and then it closed for 3 years, and then Sam Mendes took the theatre over. In fact, the theatre, Donmar, was dressed up a lot, but it was still fundamentally the same theatre, the shape that it is today, but not glossy. And, it was a very different kind of place, very, very all about new work, people coming into London for the first time. And again, late night on Fridays and Saturdays, we used to do comedy. And in fact, we started off for the Comedy Store Players with an impro night with great Jim Sweeney and what was called the Rupert Pupkin Collective, after the character in the film. It was a very fertile time. So it was, I suppose, taking risks, you know, has been what's very much categorised how my success and also following my own instinct. You know, I think anyone can be talked in or out of something. And I know that for me, and it's very, very personal, this, is that my first response to a play, to material, is for me the right one. And it's very easy if you don't... You've got to remember that instant feeling of when you first read something. And I can't produce a play without being completely in love with it. I can look at other people's work and I can say I'm going to give them my theatre or program it into the Donmar. I wouldn't want to produce it, but I can see it's a very good piece of work. And there's many a time when I have not taken projects that have gone on to be very successful because I didn't have a vision as to what I thought it should look like at the end. And I've often said, I think this is a really good project, but it's just I'm not the right person for it. And here's a list of people who I think you should go to.
Are there any big regrets, or you just live with it automatically and never worry?
I don't think you should worry, because how can I regret something that I probably would have buggered up? You know, because I think people don't understand what producers do anymore. With the subsidised sector, there's, you know, with, you don't understand the difference between a producer and an artistic director, but in the commercial world, the producer is an artistic director, and they actually decide whether they're going to do the play. They select the director and the creative team, and they have a very big influence into the casting. Well, very major, major things, what an artistic director does, but they also raise the money, and they often take the risks themselves on it. And there are times when, you know, I've taken huge risks on... The first time I mortgaged my flat was for a play which I produced at the Royal Court Theatre. It was directed by a very close friend, Gary Hines, and it was A Whistle in the Dark by Tom Murphy. Very violent play about an Irish family. And it was going to be part of what was then the London International Festival Theatre. And one of my main investors disappeared just before it. And I'm not to see, it a very interesting background. But I didn't really have a choice. And I still remember the day the reviews came out and getting up really early and rushing to the news to get all the reviews. And I was sitting up in bed reading the reviews, and they were all brilliant. I'm turning to my newly married husband and saying, oh, thank goodness, they're really great reviews. I won't have to sell the flat. And there was this silence. And it was like in slow motion. He turned his face round very slowly with a look of absolute horror and said, what? I said, oh, well, you know, because my investor ran out, blah, 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 blah. And I said, what's the problem? This is my premarital flat. And he said, what are you talking about? It's my home. How could you? And, of course, I just hadn't thought about it because, you know, I hadn't sort of shared my life like that before. And I made him a promise that I would never do it again. And he said, I don't want to know. Don't tell me what you do because I don't have the nerve to keep up with it. So many years later, about 18 years later, when I sat him down, he's very, very risk averse. We've known each other since we were at university, and said, again, I remember that on one Saturday morning, look, I think I can buy these theatres, but you have to give me your half of the house and everything you've ever earned. And I'll never refer it again if you say no, because it's such a big thing to ask. And to be quite honest, I'm really expected him to say no. I didn't think for a minute, because he's so risk averse, that he would actually consent on taking risk and giving up his entire proceeds of a very hard working life on a sort of risky venture. And he didn't hesitate, he just said, take it. And actually, it took me 4 years before I had the courage to, I'm looking to him last Christmas saying, why did you say yes? And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, because I thought you were a very good bet. And he's never taken a bet in his life. He said, I thought I knew what you knew what you were doing. Now I really understood what you do. And the day.
What happened during that 18-year period?
I ran the Don Mar, and then I was an independent producer. And then I got headhunted, actually, funnily enough, courtesy of Nick Allott at Karen McIntosh's, to go to sort of be the creative side of what was then Stonewall's Theatres, as owned by Janet Holmes Accord. And they had a chief executive and a finance director, but they didn't have someone who came from a producing background and who really kind of was pretty much up on plays, actors, directors, that the whole thing. And to be quite honest, you know, when Nick Allott ran me up and said, oh, I think, you know, someone's looking for someone, I think I've recommended you to them and I think you'd be exactly the right person. I was like, why? I'm not the least bit in, ooh, you know, horrible, nasty, big West End theatre company. And, you know, I felt I was sort of a bit more cutting edge than that, really. And actually, it was Janet Holmes Court who persuaded me, and I went, and I learned an awful lot, and I felt hopefully I took the company to taking greater risks in what was on in their theatres than they otherwise would have taken, and I learned a lot. And because again, you know, I was able to negotiate to keep on running the Comedy Awards, then the Perrier Awards, which of course I've been. Been very much my baby since 1984, and to carry on producing. So, you know, I was able, as long as I raised my own money, which I did, I carried on producing and co-producing. And then Andrew Long Webber bought the theatres out, and I stayed with Really Useful. But I was a lousy employee, and indeed I was. You know, I was stroppy and had very strong opinions and all those things. And I'd never really seen myself, I'm better. I prefer to be running my own ship. And I like the responsibility. I like the fact that with what I do now is that, you know, if I make a mistake, I suffer the most. And if I succeed, it makes a lot of people happy, but it's the greatest pleasure is mine. And I suppose I have to admit that I like there is a certain element, though I've never been a bettor. I don't bet on horses or gamble. There's a real pleasure in starting with that blank page and actually helming everything all the way through. And now, you know, I own five uneconomical playhouses, which I love. I mean, I really love my five theatres, and we're now restoring them very much courtesy of Restoration Levy, which is such a pleasure. I have the best loos in London at the Duchess.
as we know, you are so proud of those, and as good as any five-star hotel, I think was the quote.
Thank you. Whoever said that, they were so right.
I think it was Anika Burns.
I said that. Well, someone must have said that to me, and I picked up on it. We just about do the same at the Apollo. The ladies are being done there. But I'm sure the beautiful refurbishment of the front house of the Apollo is just... it's just so transformed. And I stand at the other side of Shaftesbury Avenue and I look at how lovely it looks, and I just feel so proud that we've done that. And but it's a joy, and I always feel that I'm privileged to be doing something that for me is a complete vocation. It's a way of life. There are times when, you know, it's really tough and you're in despair and you can't get the show right, and but that's just part of the sort of highs and lows of trying to create good theatre.
You do always look like you're enjoying yourself. It may be just a facade, but, you know, see you in a theatre, you always look happy, you always look like you're having fun, it always looks like you are following your vocation.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I am fundamentally a very happy person. I had quite a tough childhood, and but I've always wanted to be happy, and I think that is the secret of life, that people should find out what it is that makes them happy, and it's incredibly personal. In fact, sometimes being miserable is what makes them happy. But I like to be happy, and I am built a life where I am doing the things that I love and being with people who I respect and admire and like, you know. And what a privilege to be working right at the top of the British Theatre, which is the best theatre in the world. There's no doubt about it. Nobody beats us. And we have cultivated, this whole very special, delicate system we have, where a subsidised sector works very closely with the commercial sector, and the two really do benefit each other. And, you know, having funding for the theatre in the UK is absolutely critical to its long-term health. And certainly, you know, with my President of Salt hat on, we'll do everything we can to support the subsidised sector where we can.
One major concern for everybody, I think, must be the funding cuts. It's coming across the board, but the arts are certainly being hit very, very hard from budgets that arguably weren't large enough to start with. Is there anything you can do about that? Is it actually people will come through because they always come through?
Well, I think there's always, because we in the arts all really want to do what we do, and nobody does it in order to get a huge paycheck at the end of the day. It's like being a nurse, you know, you're supposed to get, you get the rewards just by enjoyment. There is a reliance on the fact that we will continue at the same level whatever happens. Well, I mean, that's just not going to be true in this case. The talent's still going to be there, but I think it's all the development stuff that's going to be hit the most. And what I worry about most of all is how the left field genius gets through. You know, how does someone get a company like Complicité today? That is the independent voices who need to plough their own furrow to find, to do their art. I mean, I think it's very hard. You know, so when I look at my peer group, which was Simon McBurney, the Complicité, Declan Donnellan with Cheap by Jowl, I brought them first into the Donmar when they'd never done London yet. And I think both fantastic and very different companies. Yeah. Deborah Warner, with her Kick Theatre, she could only keep it going for so long, and she used to raise the money for that by having drinks parties. You had to pay for them. And but companies that new independent companies with a vision of doing things in a very specific way, but they're all quite large companies. And you need help to do that. And especially as the interaction today is between different media. So a lot of the young theatre makers are wanting to use video and film and music, all of which cost. Mm. It's not like a man and a microphone, which, you know, is a simple thing to do. And the route of going to Edinburgh Festival Fringe isn't really there in the same way for something that's large scale anymore, because it's too expensive and you can't find a good venue which has the time slot. You're told you've got to be in and out in an hour and a half, and so you can only use an hour and 10 minute stage time. So you have to find a way of doing it on the London Fringe. The working conditions are tough. You really do need to get some funding, and that's the cutting edge work which is so inspirational. It comes through and becomes mainstream. I think that is what I really worry about. So that's on the creative side, but again, all the development work on audiences, I mean, that's obviously an easy place for it to go. How the regional theatres work together, where they cannot command a very high ticket price. You know, I go off to the regions and I find that I've paid £12.50 for a good seat to have a very, very good evening. And you're left with £12 once you've paid VAT and credit card commission. You know, that's not a lot of money in the box office. So I'm very concerned about it. And I think the theatre is very good at helping itself. So what you're seeing now is more and more co-productions. Mm-hmm. I've just been in Liverpool to see Antony and Cleopatra. Liverpool's had two co-productions coming into the West End this year. They had Jonathan Pryce in The Caretaker, yep, and also Ghost Stories, which they do with the Lyric Hammersmith, also playing the Duke of York's. And I think that everyone's being as smart as they can be, but we really are now, that where there are no more cuts to be made, there's no more savings that the theatre can make. So I find that it's very concerning. And I think it's very short-sighted, the government, because I don't really see it as a subsidy, it's investment. The theatre gives back much more than it is lent, if you like, in subsidy. And that's what it is. It's sort of as a cash flow, really. And we're very cost-effective. Every time, over the years, they've had studies into how the theatre is run, it's always come out with, goodness me, that no money is wasted. You know, what a result for every pound. Because everybody involved is so focused on getting it on stage, and there just isn't a lot of waste.
Let's hope that the ministers listen to Theatre Voice then.
Well, at the moment, the ministers don't have much of a track record listening to anybody. So I think, you know, the overall nearly 30% was quite a big shock.
Yeah.
And I think the Arts Council, I have to commend Alan Davey and his team in the way that they have managed to soften the blow for the first year, so we all have some time to kind of relook at our production plans and see what we're going to do. But we've got tough times ahead, and the VAT rise coming in January is concerning too.
On the artistic side, what are sort of the productions that you best remember or feel proudest of?
Two, I can say straight away. One was a play by Alastair Beaton called Feel Good, which I commissioned. And I'm proud of that because Alastair came in with six lines. And I just thought it sounded like a fantastic idea. And we went the long route with it, and we started it. When the play came in, it was almost like two different plays. One half was a knockabout farce, and the other half was quite a serious political, a real serious political statement. And I suggested that we ask Max Duffer-Clark to direct it, who Alistair had never met. And that was a really, really great choice because he really helped Alistair to make it one cohesive play. And Max is a brilliant editor. He's brilliant like that. And and the direct, there are directors who are great editors, and there are those that just stick with the classics because that isn't their expertise. Yeah. So that went from then to Hampstead and then into the West End, and it was a great original political satire, and they're very hard to get right.
And it just caught the moment, didn't it? And, well, having Henry Goodman is obviously a little bit of a help too.
Well, the cast were all brilliant. Henry, obviously, Nigel Planers, Sean Thomas. It was a great company, Piers Quigley. But it did catch the moment, and it got it very right. And there was a rumour that was allegedly, I have to be careful here, a Labour MP tipped off Alistair, who of course was old Labour, another old Labour colleague, that Tony Blair had sent an email around telling everyone that they weren't to go and see the play before the election. And so that, what a compliment, you know. So I was very proud of, I mean, to get something, you know, from scratch. And I would have been, I just wish that we could have then turned it into very speedily into a film, because that would have been the entire process from day one. Yeah. It's very proud of that. And the second thing that's particularly close to my heart was a very contemporary and, in my view, brilliant production of Medea, directed by Deborah Warner, starring Fiona Shaw.
That was incredible, yes. That's unforgettable.
Well, I'm incredibly proud of it. It won... that year, 2001, was my... I'm never going to do it again. My productions won 5 out of the 9 Evening Standard Awards. So we had Best Director and Best Actress for Fiona Shaw for Medea. We had Best Comedy for Feel Good. And then Kiss Me Kate, which at the Victoria Palace, which I was instrumental in bringing over, won 2 awards. So it was a really, really won Best Musical. It was a very special moment, really. That Medea was great, but I'm glad that you liked it, because I also have to say that it was a production where I lost a huge amount of money.
At least you were proud of it.
I'm incredibly proud of it, and I cannot understand why. I mean, we got wonderful reviews. There was a couple that just loathed it, which was fine, because it was an extreme production. I could imagine that you wouldn't, you know, that you might dislike it intensely. But I loved it. And it went on a very long journey, because it went to BAM and then to Broadway and on tour around the US. So it was 2 years, I think, in total, and to Paris. And it was just fantastic. So those are the two that I am absolutely most proud of.
And what does the future hold for Nika Burns, NIMAX and SALT, for that matter, or the theatre in general?
Well, I finished my 3-year presidency next July, and it's been a privilege, quite a lot of work, but I'm very, very, it was a proud moment. I'd never expected that. I was a bit surprised, really, because I always felt that, I thought, oh, here I am, really establishment now, because of course I do still see, I've still got my heart in the fringe, but no, I'm definitely a West End girl. We've got a line of productions coming up. We've just opened When We Are Married, The Garrick, which I think is a delightful production.
Indeed.
And I'm co-producing Design for Living at the Old Vic. And our next play, which is announced next week, is a new Neil LaBute play with Matthew Fox and Olivia Williams, which Neil is directing himself. And I'm doing with Anna Waterhouse, who I have been mentoring since she was at Cambridge. And as I say, she's the lead producer, and I'm in second position to her, and I'm very delighted to be in that place with her. But I'm very excited about that. I think it's a very good play. So.
Do you know where that will be playing, or its title?
Yes, it's called In the Deep Dark Forest, and it will be in a NIMAX theatres near you. And our 5 theatres are, of course, the Apollo and Nurick on Shaftesbury Avenue, the Garrick, the Vaudeville and the Duchess.
Nika Burns, thank you so much. That's wonderful.
My pleasure.